Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Welcome to another episode of Voices for Excellence. I am your host, Dr. Michael Connor, CEO and founder of the Agile Evolutionary Group, and of course, the proud host of VFE. And today's guest, it's been a little while, right, Steve? And this is what's great about this. It's like, you know how natural innovators just connect with each other. And Steve and I, we just connected and we first met on the Find Your Grind Advisory Board. And shout out to the Find Your Grind team. And, you know, as sitting on the advisory board, you get in these really in-depth discussions, conversations around various tenets of a product, you know. And as we expanded upon our discussions, I was like, Steve, man, who is this guy? Steve, he's got an AI mind. So then we started just emailing, contacting each other. And then here we are today, months after. I can't even think, it's been a year now, right, Steve? We've known each other for a year. And it has been just absolutely some amazing, amazing conversations that actually led to an innovation that Steve is going to talk about. And just like I said, I love his work. I love what he's doing. And then I always just kind of give him a telephone call. There's something that I'm thinking about with AI or innovation that I have to unpack internally and intrinsically. Steve is the guy that I call. He doesn't know that. That's probably why he knows he gets a lot of the text messages and emails. Like, why is this guy calling me? But without further ado, I am so glad to bring on my brother, my friend, Mr. Steven Iglesias, who is the Chief Innovation Officer for Doral Academy. And Doral Academy, I mean, he works with academia. I mean, we're going to get all into that, but just the myriad of things that he is immersed upon, and then also considered one of the leading thought leaders with AI and education in Florida. So without further ado, of course, we serve on the advisory board for Find Your Grind, but to have Steven Iglesias here, I don't know if I should say, what's good? How you doing? Should I be proper? Should I be, you know, politically, you know, posturing, you know, or could I just be Mike? But like I said, without further ado, just love this brother. Steve, welcome to VFE, man.
Mike, thank you for having me on. I mean, this is such an honor, and I'm truly humbled to be on here with you. I mean, our relationship has grown over the past year. You're more than a colleague, but a friend.
Absolutely, absolutely. And Steve, man, before the podcast recording was happening, we were talking about the humidity and heat index. Now, I've told Steve, right, and he just couldn't fathom this. I told Steve, I'm like, Steve, I have not turned on the air conditioner all summer until yesterday. Steve over here in 100 degree weather with 90.
I haven't turned it off. I haven't been able to turn it off.
Well, talk to me in December, all right? When the windows are up, you're outside, and I'm suffering with snow every day. But Steve, I want my audience just to be able to unpack your expertise, acumen, and aptitude when it comes to AI and education, specifically your work that you're doing in Florida as well as nationally. But as I stated before at the outset, Steve, you are such a staunch and impactful voice within the education technology and AI vertical, specifically in this ecosystem of education. But what song, Steve? What song? I'm sorry, I'm laughing, but I can't wait to hear this. What song defines your leadership signature in the AC stage of education after COVID-19?
First of all, I want to say that that's such a unique question. And I've done a couple of these and nobody's ever asked me that. But you know, when I think about what I want to accomplish, it's very simple, obviously very hard to do, but it's to prepare kids for the future. And it's to get kids dreaming. So the song is A Million Dreams from The Greatest Showman. It, you know, when you look back at, you know, the during the space race and the technology era of the 1950s and 60s, I mean, even way before that, who were the champions of society? It was the astronauts. Every kid in the 50s and 60s wanted to be an astronaut. They wanted to go to space. They wanted to solve a major problem that the United States was having. And before that, the scientists, the Einsteins of the world, the Alan Turings of the world were the heroes of society. We need to bring that back back to our country. And you know, 60 Minutes did a study in this country that over 70% of the kids ages 14 and under, their biggest goal and dream in today's society is that they want to be TikTokers and YouTubers. They did that same study in China, and over 70% of them want to be entrepreneurs. They want to be scientists, astronauts, engineers, you know, folks that are building meaningful things for society. I was funny. I was listening to a podcast by Palmer Luckey. Palmer Luckey's the guy that invented the Oculus Quest, sold it to Meta later, now has a tech defense company. And he's on this podcast with Peter Diamandis, and they're talking. And, you know, Palmer just goes to Peter. He says, you know, we always tell our kids they got to follow their passions and their dreams. But what if today they have really crappy passions? And 60 Minutes proves that reality is you know, over 70% want to be want to be influencers or want to be TikTokers and YouTubers and not building something, and we're not creating tomorrow's problem solvers.
Well contextualized, Steve, right? Because, hey, let's just get back to the song, A Million Dreams, unbelievable song. Love that, Steve. I was thinking something else, but I just love the association. But when you think about, and I want to be able to expand on this, and I apologize at the outset, Steve, because as you know, our conversations really become extensive and deep, and there's a variety of different sub-questions that I want to ask you. But when we think about the economic shifts that we're seeing in education, I'm sorry, the economic shifts that we're seeing in the world that has a residual impact in education specifically, how do we now, when we think about majority of Generation Alpha, right, moving into Generation Beta, who was just born on January 1st, TikTokers, influencers, YouTubers, versus now when we see really, I like to say, accelerated digital paradigm, specifically when we start talking about super intelligence, when we start talking about these AI agents one-on-one, when we talk about in moving from automation to augmentation with human potential, human capacity, capabilities. How do we now start to shift the mindset of our students to focus on what you stated about students in other countries around computer science, around engineering, around these divergent AI workforce focuses that are going to be a part of our economy? Now, I get it. Our students, they see these TikTokers, they see these influencers, they see these YouTubers, they're making millions of dollars. They have millions of followers. But how do we now start to shift that? What does that look like? That's a mindset shift for a generation that has just been immersed, you know, in the generative world, immersed in the quantum world.
Another great question. You know, I think a lot of it has to do with exposure. And by the way, I think this is the most important thing we should be asking is how do we make this shift? For sure, it's a paradigm shift, and it's a big one. There's a stat that's rolling out there by Dell that over 80% of the jobs these kids are going to have in the next 10 years, they don't even exist today. So how do we even begin to prepare them for something, for a future that we don't know exist? And so what we have to look back is kind of reverse engineer that and take a skills-based approach. Okay, what are the qualities that these students need to have? Let's talk about one of them that I see a major lack in is resilience. I see a huge disparity. For example, and I'll give you a use case, take an athlete. An athlete learns through sport, learns discipline, learns how to fail, learns the, you know, sportsmanship, communication, the intangible skills that make them more resilient in the future than the non-athlete student. And so if you look at today's generation of students that are they're not involved in any form of competition, whether it's athletic or non-athletic, they are less resilient than the ones that are. And it's important to look at that and say why. It's because we're exposing them to the ability to fail in an environment where they learn how to fail, they learn to get back up, they learn to get better, they learn to work with others to be able to succeed. And so I think if we start bringing that to schools through different programs, like we built in our tech labs throughout Doral and Academica, these types of programs where the students are simulating that real world environment, where you're putting them in an experiential environment for them to fail, for them to succeed, for them to work together, work on project management, and gain all these intangible skill sets that you don't get in your regular classroom.
You know what? You just really simplified, and I know you do a lot of reading, a lot of research. The McKinsey study, the Delta 2030 study, Delta meaning distinct elements of talents, and you targeted the last two domains that's obsolete within the operating model education: self-leadership, digitalization, two things critical. But Steve, you know what? You and I have, we've had many of these conversations, right? And I just find it A, intoxicating, and B, invigorating, that there's this globalization around technology and AI, specifically in various tenets within the operating model. More broadly, this global discussion, as I highlighted, within the business education model. But from your lens of leadership, Steve, and I want you to unpack this. We talked about this before, but I want my audience to hear this. What are some of these emergent trends in AI that can define this 22nd century education model we always talk about, Steve, right? How do we now integrate, interface, intersectionality of trends of AI in this new 22nd century education model? But moreover, how do we align these trends to ensure we're preparing, or there's this level of baseline readiness with Generation Alpha and Generation Beta?
You know, I think there's always been a disconnect between academia and the real world. And for a really long time, it worked. We sent everybody to college. Everybody got educated, got the minimums that they needed to enter the workforce. They entered the workforce. They were ready to go. I think today, the workforce is saying, we're waiting for these kids, you know, 4 to 5 years to get out of college. We're getting them and they're not ready to go. Something's missing here. There's a missing link. And I think for the most part, everybody already knows what these trends are. It hasn't changed in the last 3 years. But, and these trends are, you know, AI personalized learning and tutoring, where we can individualize education. We've been talking about this for 3 years. Is anybody really, really doing it? Right? These are the things that we gotta now evaluate. Yeah, they're out there, but is anybody actually doing it? And if they're doing it, is it working? And so you see a lot of in the education space right now, you see a lot of innovation, which I love to see. You know, when charter schools came in, charter schools, they just did the good ones. They just did everything the private schools were doing, everything that public schools were doing, and they did it just faster and better. And so that made, that kind of pushed private schools now to start putting dollars back into an investment back into their campuses, updating their campuses, bringing new innovative programs that charter schools were bringing, right? And so everybody kind of upped their game. Now you have micro schools, homeschooling has become a significant force. So all this innovation has kind of brought a sense of, now there are options in the market, which is a good thing. I think the false pretense going back to the trends, you know, predictive modeling, predictive analytics, we know we're getting there, but who's doing it? Those are the champions in the market that we got to highlight. The mistake I think that we make is, and for education for the most part has always done, is to find that model that works for everyone. And I think what this has unpacked in today's world with technology converging across every single industry is that there isn't a one-size-fits-all model. I think parents are going to have to get ultra-educated on, number one, understanding and knowing their kid and knowing what's best for their child. Maybe it is that big environment. Maybe it is the micro-school environment. What is it that's best for your kid? And I think we're going to continue to see more of that for a while, an ultra decentralization of, education and what model works best for my kid.
I was writing down or capturing some of your sentiments and themes, Steve, and it resonates with me because I remember I was stating this before COVID. I would say, yeah, before COVID and even during COVID. And I was having many conversations, and I would say that, my statement could be characterized as contentious, albeit it's correct. I always state that public education in totality should have competition. And what I mean by that is it should have competition to be able to design, elicit, implement a model that is best for the customer, right? And when I say that, it brings a level of contention, right, Steve? But I always bring it back to let's move it to a consumer standpoint. You and I, Steve, there's an where we have two ice cream parlors across the street. My ice cream parlor is on East Street, your ice cream parlor is on West Street. And we're competing for what? The same market. We want to be able to provide the best service, the best product for our customer. And our customer are going to make choices on which ice cream parlor, ice cream shop they're going to go to. This is where I think, Steve, we can't have a one-size-fits-all model, the operating model. We have to have divergency, intentional divergency with innovation, AI, personalization, as you talked about, moving from theory to practice. And I don't believe that creating competition to have a better product and service for our customers, i.e., families and students, is bad. We always see athletes step up to the equation when we talk about competition. Kobe Bryant, somebody I idolize, right? Who was his biggest fierce competitor? Michael Jordan, right? This is where people step up. And this is where I think that, education, we're now in this AC stage of education, this fourth industrial revolution, decentralization that creates to innovative options, personal context for students is okay. And I concur with you that, I never blame any individual. I always reference back to W. Edward Deming's quote, "Every system is perfectly designed for the outputs that it gets." It's the design of the operating model. The operating model is what fossilized. It's what is an industrial model that has step functions. And when there's bottlenecks, there's great cogitation, which exacerbates specific gaps. And we can talk about the multiple gaps within that.
Mike, if I could say one more thing to add there, and I think we got to look at what we're competing for, right? For the most part of education, for the history of education, it's been about being the gatekeepers of information. It's been about you have to come to me and I give you the information. In today's day and age, information is everywhere. And so what we got to look at competing on is what are the experiences that we're providing for these students? How are we bringing relevance from the private sector down to the school level? Like you said in our conversation, when we went to do the presentation in Ohio, our kids, and by the way, I've stolen this from you because it is the most impactful quote I've heard in a long time, is our kids are living in a world of Netflix and Spotify, and they're coming back to Blockbuster. And it couldn't be further from the truth. So what are the experiences that we're providing to get these kids ready for the future?
Absolutely. That's what it's all about, right? Future ready, future focused, future of the world, and the future of the work. That's why I've been always underscoring this 22nd century education model, because this leads right into our next question, Steve. Now, Steve, I was about to text you, and then I said, let me stop. I'm going to be seeing Steve next week, he recording this. But Steve, I'm fascinated because a vision that you and I were talking about a while ago when it was like at the infancy stages of it. Now it's about to become a reality based off the predictive models and forecasting in 2 to 3 years, Steve. Brace yourself. And I know you heard this already, but I had to brace myself for it. 2 to 3 years, we could be introducing super intelligence into the world. Now, to my audience, what does that mean? And I'm only going to get nerdy for about 60 seconds. There's a whole bunch of data sets within a model. And then now, usually, when models are there, there's these supervised processes that are going on in the back. It's pretty much step function, right? A to B, B to C, C to D. But now, with super intelligence, models can self-correct themselves. There's enough data, I believe, Steve, to have that. The problem is, I mean, obviously, financial resources to provide the necessary compute and power to now really mobilize this self-correcting process within the models. What does that mean to my audience? And Steve, you know this, major implications with regards to operating model design, with regards to readiness to have this radical shift, this disruptive factor back in that will be very, very fast. Mindsets in the context of, we're just starting to understand the foundational literacy aspects of AI, let alone move into super intelligence. And what I've been calling for, now we really can realize this 22nd century education model, because super intelligence disrupt the current architecture, infrastructure, conditions of learning, what you and I were just talking about previously for Generation Alpha and Generation Beta. Now, Steve, that is a game changer. Super intelligence will change pretty much. I mean, obviously, it's got to go through its initial stages. You know, there's going to be some kinks to work out, but this will be a game changer in 5 to 6 years if this is true. Our kids, Steve, probably will have a non-traditional educational experience. We want socialization, build resilience, build some of those core skills that we talk about. But it truly can be a disruptive experience for Generation Alpha, Generation Beta. The antithesis of what we know. But Steve, from your expertise, what disruptive factors outside of this whole superintelligence notion that we're going to be talking about, I think within the next year, really talking about it, but what factors should we be talking about now and preparing for, even though we truly are in the infancy stages of AI in education?
Wow, so there's a lot to unpack there, but again, it's something I think we need to be talking about. And I think since COVID, it's obviously accelerated, and every day it seems like in the AI space alone, it doubles in speed by what's all the new things that are coming out. You know, last year I had a unique experience in when I went to FETC in January, actually, of this year. And for the first time, I walked through all the vendors in the hall, and basically, you know, I was kind of overwhelmed. I would say I'm somebody that's abreast of everything that's happening in AI and I keep track of what's happening in the real world. And I put on my administrator hat and I looked around and I'm like, how do I begin with all this? It's all noise. Like, where do I start? Where do I begin to look? And so it got me thinking, like, you know, for the last 2 years, we've been kind of adopting AI in schools. We went from we're shutting it down to no, this is not going anywhere. We got to start adopting. But I think there's something we're missing. And that one thing we're missing is we're teaching right now, we're teaching tools. If you look at in the classroom, that's what Google, that Google's capturing, the students that Google's going after, teaching AI and AI literacy. We're teaching kids tools. I think that's the wrong approach. And I think we got to get back to the fundamentals. And exactly because of that is that it's changing so fast, right? So if we get back down to basics and we start teaching kids computational thinking, we start with these big principles and pillars that no matter how the industry changes, they're going to be ready. And the way I kind of, analogize it is we need to teach these kids how to fish versus giving them the fishing rod and the line and all that to go and catch fish. And so when you look at, okay, what are the fundamentals? Well, we need to teach kids fundamentally what algorithms are, how they work, how computers operate, how they think. The way we prompt something is incredibly important in what type of output we get, right? And so teaching kids the skill sets, the not just like in your last episode with Wes, he talked about we need fluency. These students need to understand everything that's happening at that moment so that they can then synthesize, with what they're seeing and not just take it as is. If we continue to keep teaching the tool to the tool, we're gonna constantly be in the restarting process because it's changing so fast. We need to focus on the fundamentals that'll across the board help these students and help teachers and help leaders make decisions to build it within their culture.
Yeah, no, that's pivotal, right? Because another thing I always say, Steve, is that one day, and this is just going to be naturalized within our world, despite whatever industry vertical or vertical that we live in or operationalize our practices, is that AI is going to be naturalized and interjected into our lives where we're just going to not even notice that it's AI, right? We have been
It
distinctively.
already is. It
Yeah, yeah.
it already is.
I hope in education to reach that, right? Because, just at habit, we pick up a pen and we know that we use the pen to write stuff down. We take notes, we have our iPads or, whatever technology that we have. I hope that we get to that level in education where, we're not calling AI as a standalone, but it's just naturalized into the actual practice, Stephen. You're right, it's in our world, right? And it's
And the scary thing is that while we're using these tools, we can't forget the whole purpose of that experience and that exercise. Let me unpack that for you. You spent 30 years or 40 years as an educator. All the experience and knowledge that you've accumulated, you have now. So when you ask ChatGPT a question, you know what a good output looks like based on your output and your experience. In today's day and age, if students are bypassing that whole workflow, the whole method of acquiring that experience and that knowledge, they're not going to know what to look for in the output. So very simply put, if I'm a computer science major, I know how to code. I know I'm a programmer, and I use ChatGPT. When I prompt it, I know the output I'm looking for. If I know nothing about code, and I prompt it to do this for me, whatever it spits out, I gotta live with. I have no option. I don't know if that's good code or if that's bad code. It's important when in our educational models is that we're not bypassing that growth period, that experiential zone for kids to acquire the skills they need to define the outcome.
absolutely. And Steve, well stated, because again, it goes back to that essential question that we talk about. How do we make this shift? And what does this shift looks like? Because it's going to undergird continuous innovation and experimentation within the model. That's why I call it, Steve, the 22nd century learning ecosystem. Because why? When we create learning ecosystems, they're adaptive. They look different for every student. They're underpinned with AI, a variety of different in the diversity of intelligent systems that is being incorporated in totality in the learning organization and school. But more importantly, you have the synergy of AI literacy, fluency, readiness between the stakeholders of that school and learning organization and the students, reciprocity with one another. Essential question that you stated, how do we make that shift? we're always going to have to iterate against it. But Steve, you're one of the passionate men I have met, specifically when it comes to AI and this work. That's why I love talking to you, man, you know? And then when I do my research, oh, wow, he's one of the big thought partners in Florida. Oh, wow, you know, nationally, he's doing this. I'm like, who am I with, right? But I mean, Steve, Chief Innovation Officer for Doral Academy, working with academia, working with Mater Brickell, those are all high-performing charter networks organizations in Florida. Serving on the Find Your Grind advisory board where we met, and that's where we started talking about this whole thing with AI, analyzing different elements and threads with the Find Your Grind product that is used across the country. But I know a little bit about this announcement that you are going to make. And I would say this has been our conversation brainchild over a year. So, Steve, this is the first VFE unveiling. Could you tell us about the AI Mindset Institute? What is this AI Mindset Institute that you're about to launch? Why are you doing this now? And if I was a leader, why is it important to me in the education ecosystem and all of the subtopics that we have covered today?
One of the things you had mentioned is how we're going to have to create that mind shift. And I don't view it as the shift being something so drastic. Actually, I kind of related to Carol Dweck's growth mindset, right? We made that shift rather quickly of how do we develop a growth mindset. The next iteration of that is how do we develop an AI mindset? And I talked a little bit about it earlier. This kind of came to me at FETC, all the noise, the confusion. I'm an administrator. I went to school to teach kids how to learn, how to create a culture where teachers can thrive in and teach kids and perform. I don't know anything about tech. And so as a leader, where do I begin? You know, if you think about what an educator has had to become the last 5 years, a Secret Service agent, sanitation specialist, a mental health professional, and the list goes on and on and on and on. And now you throw in AI, and once COVID happened, AI accelerated the process when ChatGPT came out. And I'm left to thinking, like, where do I start? And so we wanted to come up with a kind of a high-level framework, a system approach to, okay, let's look at what this tool is. Let's look at how they're adopting AI. What is it for? How does it function? Where is it pulling the data from? And now I can make a systematic decision based on this high-level framework to help leaders build and use AI in the background the way it's supposed to be. And so, again, there's just a lot of noise in the space, and I think we need to bring a little bit of clarity and some high-level frameworks to help leaders understand what's happening and what's going to continue to happen.
Absolutely. Now, Steve, the AI Mindset Institute, I know we're about to launch this, right? And really focusing on developing leadership capabilities, leadership capital, when it specifically talks about, or when we specifically talk about, how to be able to interject and integrate artificial intelligence strategically from this, whether it be site-based lens, department lens, or even organizational lens. Now, if I was signing up for this, Steve, right, just give me the basic constructs of this, because I love this. This is going to be great into my audience. We will be launching this AI Mindset Institute in the fall. You're going to be hearing more about it forthcoming in August. But however, this month, you're going to be learning about it, right? August, I can't believe August is already here, Steve. But what does this look like, right? I'm a leader. I'm going to engage with Steve and Michael in content. I'm also going to have these masterminds who I'm going to be working with in small groups. Phenomenal idea with that. But Steve, yeah, elaborate on this, because I'm sure a multitude of people are going to want to jump on this because it's continued, sustained professional learning on a topic that's so critical and essential in our industry today.
Yeah. So, one of my mentors once told me, you know, Steve, you got to stop trying to wake up the dead and get together with the folks that think like you. And I think that's why we've aligned so well, Michael. We want to start a community of innovative leaders in education, right, that are trying to push forward. We don't have all the answers, and I don't think anybody has all the answers. What we need to do is pull together, see what's working. So we're going to start basically with an 8-week cohort online that's going to culminate in a final in-person session that's over a weekend. So you're going to have your weekly session virtually with myself and Dr. Connor. The next step is there's going to be masterminds, which is going to be broken down into smaller groups, smaller sessions, more customized and tailored, where you can bring your experience to the network and get personalized attention to the content that was just delivered in the session prior. So you're going to be in a session with groups of 5 to 10 folks of like-minded individuals, and you're going to get to share your example, your specific scenario to how you can start adopting AI, what's working, what's not working. You're going to hear from industry professionals in the AI space, not just education, but industry professionals in AI, where it's headed, where it's going, and it's going to be tailored to you and your school. So just surrounding yourself, creating that kind of learning by osmosis, I like to call it, and being around an environment, putting yourself in an environment where we want to help each other win.
Absolutely. And Steve, what I love about this, and I'm taking this from an adult science, adult learning aspect, andragogy, even down to a third-tier heterodoxy, self-directed learning. The broader content to my audience, the broader content is where Steve and I, on a weekly basis, will be delivering it to the whole group, but where it gets down to that level of specificity, that level of personalization, specifically in the context of what Steve stated at the outset, moving from theoretical discussions to actual practice and alignment to the content. I think that this is going to be really how we can systematize AI in our classrooms, AI in leadership, where it's just not purely content driven, theoretical driven, industry driven, but we're bringing the level of personal experiences and then now applying those practices within the mastermind groups that we're going to have. I tell you, Steve, some of the people that we have, we won't make the announcement today, but some of the people that we have lined up to lead these small group facilitations, these mastermind facilitators, I'm looking at this and I'm looking at the content that we're about to propose. I'm like, where was this? Where was this when I was a leader? But it's that onward movement to the 22nd century model, that onward movement to be able to collectively shift the model towards that 22nd century for Generation Alpha, Generation Beta. I'm actually looking forward to this, Steve, right? The AI Mindset Institute, when we started to talk about this and ask other leaders across the country, or I should say globally, about this, they say, yes, the time is now. That's why I always say that the future of education is now. So to my audience, you will be seeing information, receiving information regarding the AI Mindset Institute that will be launching in fall of 2025, especially the industry leaders, both whether it be AI worlds, education worlds, that we're going to be inviting, and then also some of the mastermind leaders specifically targeted so that they'll be able to help you, A, with those shifts, but more importantly, collectively with you or your teams to make that mindset shift to this AI focus. But Steve, if I'm a leader thinking about enrolling in a rigorous program, because I know how I am, right? But if I want to enroll in a rigorous program or an institute, i.e., like an AI Mindset Institute, what advice would you give me or any leaders about transforming capabilities to deepen practical application of AI within their learning organization or school?
I mean, look, I think for the most part in education, leaders have we suffer from this syndrome where we want to make sure we have have all the facts and we want to make sure we're 100% ready before we jump in. I think with this, with the rate of speed of technology, the way it's going, whether it's AI, whether it's virtual reality, augmented reality, quantum computing, we're going to be worse off if we wait. And there's no quicker way to learn this stuff than by jumping in and doing it. You know, I think STEM, for the most part, has been promoted in this country for the last 50 years pretty heavily. And they've, poured tons of funds for schools to promote and to install these programs into their districts and schools. And, I think where we have gone wrong is it's like we try to teach these kids how to play baseball from a book or how to ride bike from a book. Instead of let's get a bike, let's go out to the street, let's physically hands-on learn. And it's been proven statistically that there is a much more advantage of learning this type of technology by doing it versus I'm not saying that, don't read or don't study ahead of time, but you got to do both. We got to learn how to become exponential learners. And that's something we talk about in the framework that we gotta learn and collapse time frames by learning. And the only way we can do that is by combining the theory and experiential learning and put it together.
Absolutely. And Steve, I'm only going to say three words because what you captured is absolutely phenomenal. And this is a great book, Steve, that probably you and I have read. Learning by doing, right? Learning by design. And I think that we need more of that. And education has to make that shift.
I think I'm living proof of that. Quick backstory on me. I started in at Dorado actually in 2009. I was a security guard and a baseball coach. I then moved into the classroom. My administrator at the time when I was a security guard was like, "Hey, you seem to have a little bit of common sense. Why don't you think about becoming an administrator?" And I'm like, "Yeah, I could do that." And so he's like, "You're gonna have to get into the classroom." I got into the classroom. Then I 3 or 4 years after that, 4 years after that, I got into administration, kind of grunt work, head dean of discipline. Head of security, then became the operations manager of the facilities, all six buildings. And then in 2018, I was bored. I wanted to get the hell out of education. And I was reading a book by Peter Diamandis called Bold, and it's talking about everything that's happening in technology in the real world. And I'm like, man, kids need to know about this stuff. I kind of re really enjoy this stuff, and nobody's ever. I was actually pushed away from technology because I didn't have the right math scores when I was in school. And so at 35 years old, I realized, wow, this is my passion. And I wanted to find me in middle school and high school to inspire to go into these fields to be the future problem solvers of our society.
Absolutely. And Steve, and I love hearing your story when you tell me, I've heard it, so many times, but every time I hear it, I just love it, right? And just new nuggets about you that I just learned. And I'll tell you this, and I'm glad you brought your story up because, and this is where I think we fail because we have this hyperseveration over percentiles, right? Over benchmarks, over, I should say, cut scores, over proficiency standards. Where, Steve, when I speak to you all the time, sometimes I think I'm talking to a software engineer, but yet students are giving this categorization because of a test score. Let's comprehend that, right? You even stated it. You're not supposed to be where you're at because of your test scores. And that's the traditional mindset in education. Because a student didn't meet a certain cut score, they fall into a specific tier. But let alone if I put you in a room with software engineers and data scientists, you would think you have that systemic background, long-standing background, education included. This is where we have to change the mindset, Steve. But I can tell you one thing that you're going to love when I state this. Man, you look like you're about 25 now, brother. Can I get some of that Florida sun?
I keep the schools cold. I keep the schools cold to preserve.
I tell you, man, you were like, man, 18 when I was 35. I'm like, man, you late about 25 right now. But last question, Steve, what three words, and you don't have to be limited to three words. Nobody is usually on this question, but what three words do you want today's audience to leave our podcast with regards to AI and the impact that it could potentially have on human potential in the AC stage of education?
I think number one is relevance. If we want our schools to matter again, we need to mimic what's happening in the real world and give them that experience to prepare them. I think it leads with that. We have to get them ready for the real world. Anything else is kind of nonsense. What's the point, right? I think number two is agency. We teach kids to follow instructions. And when you take them outside of that, they don't know how to function. And so what we need to do is teach kids these skills to be able to think, to be able to think now in systems with computers, with this new AI operating mindset and system that's going to change the way we live forever. I mean, you know, I'm sure if you look back to when the horses were getting ready to be displaced to buggies and cars, there were people that are like, oh, this is crazy. This is never going to happen. And in a short window, shortly after, everybody drove a car, right? The same thing's going to happen here. It's just going to happen faster because you have multiple technologies that are converging across every single industry. And then the last word I think is resilience. That is what we need to succeed in the future. Because we have to try things and we're gonna fail, and we got to continue to move forward, because that truly is the only way that we're gonna get through this AI era, what's gonna be known as the AI era, is trying out these new things, see what works, see what doesn't. We're not going to be perfect. And I think academia sometimes wants everything to be perfect before we dive in. So we need to teach kids how to bounce back and resilience.
Relevance, agency, and resilience. I couldn't put it any better. Steven Iglesias, thank you for joining Voices for Excellence. Moreover, I want to personally thank you for joining this movement for me within my corporation, as well as AEG Systems, to be able to work and partner with you for the AI Mindset Institute that we're about to launch in the fall. It's going to be fun. We're going to have a lot of leaders joining our first cohort. We're looking forward to that. But Steve, if anybody wants to reach out to you to really expand on any of the essential and critical themes from this episode, moreover, if they want to find out more about the AI Mindset Institute that we are about to launch in sunny 110 degree Miami, Florida, how would they be able to get in contact with you?
Yeah, sure. You can get me on LinkedIn. It's just Steven Iglesias on LinkedIn. And then on X, it's Steve02113, at Steve02113. You can also send me an email at si@innovatedstrategies.com.
There you have it. And Steven, thank you for everything that you do. I'm sure probably later on today, we'll probably get together, send some text messages, send some articles, send some really nerdy stuff together. But appreciate the collaboration and appreciate your friendship, my friend.
Hey, thank you. This was an awesome conversation. And I always love having them with you. And so thank you very much.
Absolutely, Steve. And on that note, onward, upward, everybody. Have a great evening.